The Later Elmshaven Years, 1905 to 1915, Volume 6, Chapter 16. The General Conference Address on Health Reform. Among the papers carried by Ellen White to Washington to present to the General Conference session was one entitled Faithfulness in Health Reform. As mentioned in the preceding chapter, she presented this on Monday morning, May 31. The subject was one that had touched much of her life, and one for which she, because of its large importance and an abundance of instruction given to her, carried a heavy burden. She kept the matter of health reform before the church and the world in numerous articles in the Review and Herald, the Health Reformer, the Youth's Instructor, and in pamphlets and books. Christian Temperance and Bible Hygiene was published in 1890, and the compilation of Healthful Living, assembled by Dr. David Paulson, came out in 1897 while she was in Australia. Then in 1905, the Ministry of Healing, with its well-balanced presentation designed to reach both the church and the world, was published. Testimonies for the Church also carried instruction on health-related lines. It was a matter Ellen White mentioned occasionally in her letters. On February 5, 1908, she wrote, "We endeavor to use good judgment in determining what combinations of food best agree with us. It is our duty to act wisely in regard to our habits of eating, to be temperate, and to learn to reason from cause to effect. If we will do our part, then the Lord will do his part in preserving our brain nerve power." Letter 50, 1908. She attributed strict temperance in eating as one reason for her ability to do so much work in speaking and writing, Ibid. Addressing one influential minister on March 28, 1909, she declared, "True conversion to the message of present truth embraces conversion to the principles of health reform." Letter 62, 1909. She was concerned that there was a growing laxness among Seventh-day Adventists in the matter of diet. There were those who, in spite of the light God had given, were still eating meat quite freely. Particularly was she concerned that church leaders in Washington were not taking the aggressive stand in this matter that it was their privilege to take. Background for the address on health reform on March 29, 1908, she had penned a letter to Elder A. G. Daniels, president of the General Conference, relating to the experience of church members in Washington, D.C. After expressing her agreement with plans for the erection of a meeting house in Tacoma Park, she pointed out the responsibility of the believers and workers in Washington to witness to the thousands of residents in that area who had not yet heard the third angel's message. Workers were to bring to mind the words of Christ, "Ye are the light of the world. Ye are the salt of the earth." Then under a subheading of Backsliding and Health Reform, she wrote, "I am instructed to bear a message to all our people on the subject of health reform, for many have backslidden from their former loyalty to health reform principles. The light God has given is being disregarded. A true reformation needs to take place among the believers in Washington on the matter of healthful living. If the believers there will give themselves unreservedly to God, He will accept them. If they will adopt in the matter of eating and drinking the principles of temperance that the light of health reform has brought to us, they will be richly blessed. Those who have received instruction regarding the evils of the use of flesh meats, tea and coffee, and rich and unhealthful food preparations, and who are determined to make a covenant with God by sacrifice, will not continue to indulge their appetites for foods which they know to be unhealthful. God demands that the appetites be cleansed, and self-denial be practiced in regard to those things which are not good. This is a work that will have to be done before His people can stand before Him a perfected people. The Lord has given clear light regarding the nature of the food that is to compose our diet. He has instructed us concerning the effect of unhealthful food upon the disposition and character. Shall we respond to the counsels and cautions given? Who among our brethren will sign a pledge to dispense with flesh meats, tea, and coffee, and all injurious foods, and become health reformers in the fullest sense of the term?" Near the close of the letter of appeal, she wrote, "I am sure if you will begin in Washington to do this work of reform in the school, in the printing office, and among all our working forces, the Lord will help you to present a pledge that will help the people to return from their backsliding on the question of health reform. And as you seek to carry out the will of the Lord in this particular, He will give you clearer understanding of what health reform will do for you. Because of the example set by influential men in the indulgence of appetite, the truth has not made the impression on hearts that it might have done. I appeal to you now to set an example in self-denial. Cut off every needless indulgence, that God may bless you with His approval and acceptance." Letter 162, 1908. Ellen White held the letter for a few weeks, then sent it in late May, 1908. Copies were sent at that time also to several members of the General Conference Committee. Drive W. A. Rubel, Secretary of the General Conference Medical Missionary Council and a member of the General Conference Committee, who was promoting health reform interests in the denomination, sought permission almost immediately from Mrs. White's office to duplicate and circulate the letter. In response, W. C. White replied, The testimony sent to Elder Daniels, dated March 29, regarding backsliding on health reform, contains some statements regarding local conditions in Washington which Mother desired that our brethren there should read and study, but which she does not think it would be well to give a wide circulation. That part of the testimony which is of general interest will soon be prepared for publication, DF 509, WCW to W. A. Rubel, July 24, 1908. Dr. Rubel's request was dated June 18, but Elder White delayed in responding until he could communicate with Elder Daniels, to whom the E.G. White letter in question was addressed. Daniels was in the field attending camp meetings. He replied on July 17, 1908, pointing out the pressure under which he had been working. Regarding the letter he had received from Sister White, he wrote, "One feature of the message perplexed me. I felt that I must have a little time and quiet calm to consider what was written. The point that perplexes me is the suggestion to circulate a temperance pledge which includes abstinence from flesh foods and some other foods known to be injurious. I feel that I need counsel regarding this before I shall know just how far to go in this direction." DF 509, AGD to WCW, July 17, 1908. In closing his letter to W. C. White, Daniels made an earnest request. "As I am hoping to see you soon, I ask the privilege of talking with you about this question before taking steps to circulate a pledge. When we have done this and counseled with your mother, then I shall take the matter up just as she says the Lord directs that we should do. The health reform question is a great one and a perplexing one, Ibid." W. C. White reports that his mother gave hearty assent to this proposal. An interview between her, Elder Daniels, and W. C. White was held about 2 weeks later at her home, late in July or early in August, 1908. In a letter written in 1928, Elder Daniels recounted that experience, as expressed in my letter of July 17, 1908, addressed to Elder W. C. White. "I felt the need of further counsel with Sister White before taking any action regarding the circulation of an anti-meat pledge. The Lord says, 'Come now, and let us reason together.' In my long association with Sister White, I had always found her ready to enter into the most careful and extended consideration of matters that perplexed me. I desired just such an interview with her concerning the anti-meat pledge suggested in her letter of March 29, 1908. This interview was granted me on my first visit to Sister White's home after making the request for it in my letter of July 17. In that interview, we talked over the food problems in various countries: Europe, Russia, South America, China, and various mission fields, as well as the situation in North America. We also talked at length about the circulation of an anti-meat pledge, whether it should be for the Washington, D.C. church or all our churches through the world. We reviewed the uninstructed condition of the masses of our people regarding the broad principles of health reform and the harm that had at various times been done by extremists. The conclusion reached by our study was that an extensive, well-balanced educational work should be carried on by physicians and ministers instead of entering precipitately upon an anti-meat pledge campaign. There was a clear understanding arrived at, and Sister White thereafter treated me in the whole matter according to that understanding." DF 509, AGD to WCW, April 11, 1928. In his interview seeking her counsel, Elder Daniels reviewed with her and W. C. White some of the experiences of church workers in certain parts of the world in which it had been necessary to eat some meat to sustain life. Ellen White herself knew something of such, for at times, particularly in Europe in the mid-1880s, she could not carry out in an ideal way the vegetarian principles that are not difficult to follow in other parts of the world. As her part in the educational work on health reform that she and Elder Daniels discussed, she moved into the preparation of the statement "Faithfulness in Health Reform," to be read at the General Conference session. The fact that Elder Daniels counseled with Sister White about implementing what was suggested in the testimony has perplexed some. We would call attention to Ellen White's own statement as written in a letter on July 8, 1906, which sets forth certain principles: "It requires much wisdom and sound judgment, quickened by the Spirit of God, to know the proper time and manner to present the instruction that has been given. In the early days of this cause, if some of the leading brethren were present when messages from the Lord were given, we would consult with them as to the best manner of bringing the instruction before the people. Faithfully I endeavor to write out that which is given me from time to time by the Divine Counselor. Some portions of that which I write are sent out immediately to meet the present necessities of the work. Other portions are held until the development of circumstances makes it evident to me that the time has come for their use." DF 107G, The Writing and Sending Out of the Testimonies to the Church, pages 5, 6, Selected Messages 151. Should there be an anti-meat pledge? In the case under discussion, the president of the General Conference, quite willing to act according to instruction from the messenger of the Lord, felt he must do so intelligently and with proper preparation. And in this vein he wrote at length. Now it seems to me that we should do a lot of careful preparation in the way of teaching before we press the signing of a pledge. If we do not, it looks to me that we shall have a lot of unhappy divisions in churches and families. We have ministers and brethren who are not well balanced. Let these men get among our Scandinavian, German, and Russian brethren who have not been led along this road as far as some have been and try to force this pledge, and we shall have trouble. A few years ago, some of our good brethren in England pressed advanced views on health reform. This teaching was taken up by some extremists in Germany and pressed to the point that nearly wrecked a number of churches. Elder Conradi had to step in and counteract this work. We have not given this important part of our message, health reform, the attention we should have late. Some have backslidden on this point. We must reform. It would be terrible for our people to go back to the general use of flesh foods, tea, coffee, etc. My heart responds to this message, and I am ready to stand in the front ranks in making a strong effort to help our people to reach a higher standard. But it is my conviction that we must begin with care to educate. Let doctors and ministers give good clear talks on the subject. Let tracts be prepared which will give the people facts regarding the dangers of flesh foods. Let us place the whole question on a high attractive platform. In my tent and church work in New Zealand, I had no trouble in persuading the people to become vegetarians when I took pains to give them good plain reasons which appealed to their reason, DF 509, AGD to WCW, July 17, 1908. W.C. White, in reviewing the question of an anti-meat pledge in 1911, explained, "The officers of the General Conference, and especially those who have labored long in foreign countries, and who have engaged in controversies in various foreign lands over this and kindred questions, felt that the movement on the part of our people to pledge themselves to not eat flesh would cause unnecessary strife and unnecessary criticism of our people in mission fields. The officers of the General Conference advised that we should not make the pledge against flesh meats a general issue, and it was agreed that the matter should rest until we could give it deliberate consideration, DF 509, WCW to F.R.M. Wilcox, October 12, 1911. Ellen White's presentations at the 1909 General Conference session. So Ellen White came before the General Conference session first with her address on May 26 on A Lesson in Health Reform, using the experience of Daniel and his companions as an example. She read the first chapter of Daniel and then commented, "This record contains much of importance on the subject of health reform. In this our day, the Lord would be pleased to have those who are preparing for the future, immortal life follow the example of Daniel and his companions in seeking to maintain strength of body and clearness of mind." The General Conference Bulletin, 1909, 214. The whole address is an appeal calling for renewed dedication to the health reform principles in their broad sense, but emphasis was placed on diet. Let no one think he can do as he pleases in the matter of diet. But before all who sit at the table with you, let it appear that you follow principle in the matter of eating, as in all other matters, that the glory of God may be revealed. You cannot afford to do otherwise, for you have a character to form for the future, immortal life, ibid. Intelligence is a gift of God, she declared, one that he desires us to use to his glory. Students need not talk of their attainments in the so-called higher education if they have not learned to eat and drink to the glory of God, and to exercise brain, bone, and muscle in such a way as to prepare for the highest possible service. And she urged that a great work is to be done, a work that we have scarcely begun as yet. Ibid. Then on Monday morning, May 31st, she came before the session to read her prepared statement on faithfulness in health reform. The script from which she read contained a major portion of her letter addressed to Elder Daniels on March 29, 1908, dealing with backsliding in health reform, much of it word for word, some parts paraphrased and adapted for the occasion. She did not, however, make reference to an anti-meat pledge, a message she originally intended particularly for workers at the headquarters in Washington. Ellen White read solemnly, and the hushed audience listened carefully to these words. "I am instructed to bear a message to all our people on the subject of health reform, for many have backslidden from their former loyalty to health reform principles. God's purpose for his children is that they shall grow up to the full stature of men and women in Christ. In order to do this, they must use aright every power of mind, soul, and body. They cannot afford to waste any mental or physical strength. The question of how to preserve the health is one of primary importance. When we study this question in the fear of God, we shall learn that it is best, for both our physical health and our spiritual advancement, to observe simplicity in diet. Let us patiently study this question. We need knowledge and judgment in order to move wisely in this matter. Nature's laws are not to be resisted, but obeyed. Those who have received instruction regarding the evils of the use of flesh meats, tea and coffee, and rich and unhealthful food preparations, and who are determined to make a covenant with God by sacrifice, will not continue to indulge their appetite for food that they know to be unhealthful. God demands that the appetites be cleansed, and that self-denial be practiced in regard to those things which are not good. This is a work that will have to be done before His people can stand before Him a perfected people, Ibid. 268. See Testimonies for the Church 9:153-166 for the full text. As she continued to read, she touched on the point of believers who accept certain portions of the testimonies as the message of God, while they reject those portions that condemn their favorite indulgences, Ibid. God requires continual advancement from His people, she urged, the General Conference Bulletin, 269. After pointing out the unfavorable effects of using flesh foods, she made a very understanding and enlightening statement, recognizing varied conditions in different parts of the world. We do not mark out any precise line to be followed in diet, but we do say that in countries where there are fruits, grains, and nuts in abundance, flesh meat is not the right food for God's people. And she declared, we are not to make the use of flesh meat a test of fellowship, but we should consider the influence that professed believers who use flesh meats have over others. Then, challenging. Will any who are ministers of the gospel, proclaiming the most solemn truth ever given to mortals, set an example in returning to the flesh pots of Egypt? Will those who are supported by the tithe from God's storehouse permit themselves by self-indulgence to poison the life-giving current flowing through their veins? Will they disregard the light and warnings that God has given them, Ibid? She called for an educational program in which cooking schools would be held, and urged that house-to-house instruction be given. She cautioned against extremes in health reform and dealt with the question of the use of milk and eggs, and the result of abandoning their use prematurely. The appeal closed with the assurance of the blessings that God has in store for those who follow wholeheartedly the light He has given on health reform. The entire address was published a few months later in Testimonies, Volume 9, as a permanent reminder and counsel to all Seventh-day Adventists and to those who would join the church. Not a test question. Ellen White's 1909 counsel that we are not to make the matter of meat eating a test of fellowship was reiterated on October 10, 1911, when she wrote, I am not prepared to advise that we make the matter of meat eating a test question with our people. Manuscript 23, 1911. None, however, can overlook the importance of a vegetarian dietary program that has proved so beneficial to so many and from year to year gains support from the scientific community and in popularity.